five, and that can be an upper or lower case and still be of dubious meaning. It's the Mike Novak Show. The collision of environmental forces that leaves dirt and twigs and bits of orange peel all over the place. So just ignore that and sing along.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
Well, thanks for being with me today, and there are a lot of ways that you can find this show, the Green Divas Global Digital Network at GDGDradio.com, iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, SoundCloud, the GLN Radio Network, and of course, at MikeNowak.net, MikeNowak.net. There might be more venues, but I haven't discovered them yet. You can find The Mike Novak Show on Facebook and on Twitter. The handle is @MikeNow. Drop me a line anytime you like, mike@mikenovak.net. I can take it. It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. And when I say Great Pumpkin, I'm talking about a monster that weighs in at 2,145.5 pounds. That happened right here in Illinois this year, and it was grown by a guy named Gene McMullen. He's on the show today, and there are a number of reasons why I think this is a compelling story. First is the obvious. Come on. The guy just grew a pumpkin that weighs as much as some cars. But when you hear the circumstances behind this achievement, well, if they made a movie of this, nobody would believe it. First, the guy's yard probably isn't bigger than yours. It's 50 by 50, which is pretty average in the scheme of things. And he's a factory worker, which means that he grows these pumpkins in his spare time. In fact, even though he grew this pumpkin in Illinois, Gene had the pumpkin weighed in a Wisconsin competition because that was when he could get a long weekend off from his job. And this year, the early season rains kept him from adding his usual complement of nutrients. If ever the fates were working against the guy, this was the year. And yet, Gene McMullen grew the largest, and by that, I mean the heaviest, pumpkin ever recorded in North America. After that, I head to Chicago's Southwest Side, literally, to talk to one of my favorite people, friend of the show Sarah Batka, who nominated a group called Grace Seeds Ministry for an award by the International Network for Urban Agriculture, or INUAG, because of their Share the Harvest program, which distributes thousands of pounds of produce to folks who really need it. If you've ever heard this show before, you know that's something that always impresses me. The woman behind Grace Seeds Ministry is Reverend Linda Wygant. I talked to her and Sarah at the Harvest Thanksgiving celebration. After that, I chat with Marina Post, one of the folks who started INUAG. She is the co-manager at Christy Weber Farm and Garden in Chicago. Christy Weber has been a big supporter of my show in the past, and it's a pleasure to show a little love for this not-for-profit organization, which is attempting to help feed people on several different continents. That's a lot of great stuff for one show, and it all starts right after this.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Every time I open up an issue of Chicagoland Gardening magazine, I know I'm going to learn something. And if you've ever read my column on the inside back page of said magazine, you'd understand what a compliment that is, because I don't learn anything easily. You might pick up some knowledge in one of the excellent feature articles or one of the regular departments like Ask the Garden Pros, or you might even be inspired by one of the luscious photos. Not only that, but Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is just one of 21 different publications of state-by-state gardening. Wherever you live in the Midwest or the South, State-by-State Gardening has a magazine for you. They feature articles by some of the leading gardening experts in each state, including famous authors, nursery owners, state extension agents, master gardeners, and even me. Subscribe today by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Old black magic has me in its spell.
Black magic that you weave so well.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. One of the things that I have covered over the many years I've been doing this, and it might seem a little odd, I don't think so, because I think it's really cool, is giant pumpkins. So I was kind of amazed and surprised the other day as I'm cruising the inner tubes and Facebook. And I see this notice on Facebook that says, "Congratulations to Gene McMullen from Streeter, Illinois. He grew the largest pumpkin ever grown in America." And I went, "What? How come I didn't know about this?" Well, I learned about it pretty quickly through Facebook. But usually, you know, I'm covering the event as they're happening, and my buddy George Janowick is often on the show. And so I thought, you know what? I will call George, not to talk to him, but to talk to Gene McMullen. And I have him on the line right now. Gene, how are you?
Great. Feeling good.
I'll bet you are. You just grew the largest pumpkin in America. Is it North America? You didn't get the world record? Well, which record did you get here, Gene?
I guess I got the North American record right now. The world record is 2,323.
And where was that grown?
That was grown over in Switzerland by Benny Meyer.
Benny, you know what? I think I read that. Was that last year or a couple of years ago?
Yeah, it was last year.
And you just broke the North American record, which is quite an accomplishment because, as I said, I've been following this for a year. And the pumpkins seem to get bigger and bigger and bigger each year. But I also know that the whole deal is fraught with difficulty because you guys start early in the season. You coddle these things, you know, you have a field and you might have several candidates for your largest pumpkin. And so you care for those, but tragedy can strike in so many ways during the growing season, can't it, Gene?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've had my ups and downs in the growing.
From what I saw, you didn't think this was going to be the year, or maybe you said that the luck had a lot to do with it this year.
Oh yeah, I believe luck always plays a big thing in growing. This year was a very, very wet year, so I didn't think much of it, but I didn't get to fertilize as much as I usually get to because I use an inline fertilizer, and when I water, that's when I fertilized. This year, I only got to actually water once in June because it was so wet, and then July maybe three times, and it had already put on its big growth spurt.
Uh-huh. Well, to explain to my listeners what inline fertilizing is.
Well, it's Easy Flow, and it's like a gallon container, and it hooks up to your water line, and it siphons out the fertilizer as your sprinkler head's running.
Oh, okay. So it's just like those when they do it on their lawn, and you have the attachment to the hose. And
right, correct. Yeah, it just siphons it out and it spreads it out as you're.
See, I had this idea that you were injecting the pumpkin or something with fertilizer.
No, that's inject them with anything is probably a big fallacy. It's you can't inject them with anything to make
really?
Them grow.
Okay. Now you got me intrigued because you're right. It was a very wet season here in the Midwest, and you grew this in Illinois, right?
Yes.
In Streator, Illinois. And I have to admit, like I was talking to George the other day, and I said, you know, I never thought that Illinois would be the place where the record holder would come from. I always thought, that's for other places. That's for the East Coast or for the West Coast or for, as you said, Switzerland.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, here we are with a pumpkin that, and by the way, what was the weight on this?
2,145 pounds.
So it weighs as much as an automobile.
Yeah, I guess it did. It was, it's just surprising.
I saw a picture of it. In fact, I'm looking at it right now, and most of these giant pumpkins look like Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah, they aren't grown for beauty. Most of them aren't anyways. They're just grown for weight.
But getting back to, you know, how this happened, you didn't get to do the normal things that you do, and yet you had your biggest pumpkin ever. That's got to give you pause, doesn't it?
Yeah. When I first started doing this, I went to a couple like seminars and some agronomists, and you listen to them talk about your soil, and the one guy it just seemed like it sunk in, feed your soil, and your soil will feed your plant.
That's a really good point. And how do you, are you talking about biology?
Yeah, there's biological, I mean, you use mycorrhizae to expand your root system, you use biologicals, as in fish and seaweed, something slow release.
Right.
To feed your soil to bacteria in the soil. And that's, I mean, you use humic acid and fulvic acid. And I mean, it's just not, you know, the potassium and the nitrogen and the...
That's really interesting because I imagine a lot of folks would think, well, yeah, you just put a lot of fertilizer down and you're going to get yourself a big pumpkin. But that's not really the case. You're talking about this is interesting, Gene, because this is what modern day horticulturists and agronomists talk about, which is, as you said, mycorrhizae and the biology of the soil and the fungi down in the soil, and everything is connected, and it's called the soil food web. And when your web is healthy, you have healthy plants. And you kind of proved that this year, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, every springtime, I actually add alfalfa meal to my soil. So I kind of like try and start it off. Some people add blackstrap molasses. They add that to it to put sugar content for all your bacteria in that to start working the soil to start producing what you need.
Right. You know, you're not going the synthetic route. So, for instance, you're not putting blue stuff on there.
No, I'm basically, all my stuff is like a fish, a seaweed for fertilizer, which is a slow release. And this year I used a product called Green Grow, and it had kelp in it, and it had humic acid or humic, you know, it had humus in it, and it was a powder mix, and it had mycorrhizae that I put at all the leaf nodes to help my soil.
A lot of people like to use those fish products, and this is sort of an endorsement for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's stuff that you don't have to, you know, it's like when you're being on steroids, you got to keep on putting the steroids to it. If you don't have to keep on giving your plant a boost, it'll just naturally do its own thing instead of trying to boost it and then have to give it another injection, then have to give it another injection.
Yeah, and you're talking about synthetics, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. It's kind of like being the junkie dealer, and your pumpkin is the junkie. Or your lawn, you know, and that's the example I use, and that's kind of what happens. They get hooked on that stuff.
And they don't really stay healthy that way.
Well, that's really very interesting. But one of the big secrets also is the genetics. And the right seed, you can't grow a giant pumpkin from just any seed. So can you? Are you at liberty to tell me which seeds you used?
I look at the seed, and if it goes heavy for the weight, you look at, what do you want to say, the people that have grown pumpkins, and they go a percentage heavy. You know, some people look for mass, you know, how big a pumpkin is.
Yeah.
But I always look for, like, a pumpkin going heavy, so hopefully the genetics from that pumpkin follow through.
So where did these seeds come from?
Different growers around the United States. Basically, I've been growing guys' seeds that went heavy, but nobody plants them. In the pumpkin world, I think too many people look at the name of the seed versus what most guys actually try and do. And a lot of guys are trying for weight as crossing heavy with heavy another pumpkin that's heavy.
Uh-huh. And the one, I think, seeds that I got before were something called Atlantic Giant or something like that?
Yes, that's the original name of them. That's basically the brand name of them, Dill Atlantic Giants. And that's where they started a long time ago. A pumpkin was crossed with a Shoking Squash. So to get a real orange pumpkin, people are really trying to take orange pumpkin and make an orange pumpkin to get really orangish pumpkins instead of the mottled colors that usually happens to them. Get green and a light orange, yellows, whites.
Does it have to be that orange color for you to enter it in this contest?
No. You just grow for weight, so whatever color comes out, you can't really dictate what color comes out. But if you're trying to cross, you know, like certain seeds with each other's with colors in them, you go for the color. If you want weight, you go for the weight. And
interesting.
It's kind of like, you know, you see a picture of what the seed produced, and then you decide what you want, a bigger shell, longer pumpkin. Some grow taller than others. Some just, I mean, I grew a flatter pumpkin this year, and but it's longer, and that was my second pumpkin I grew.
So you're going down the road less taken here. You've got your own formula for success, and obviously it's worked. Does this mean that you're going to take the seeds from this giant pumpkin winter this year and try to grow those next year?
Yeah, I'll get the seeds and dry them, and then pass them out to whoever wants them, and then I'll try and plant one and see what happens, see what the cross that I made actually does.
Are you one of those guys that, because I've heard from other giant pumpkin growers, and it's an art, a science, but it's also an obsession, meaning that they early in, you know, they get them out there early, and then some of them put them under heated tents, and, you know, just to get a head start on the season. Are you into that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, I start mine probably around the middle of April in the house. And when I had the first true leaf come out of the seed, whichever the first true leaf falls, I can go out and put that in my pumpkin patch, and you're able to direct the main vine which way you want it to go instead of just putting a seed out there. And they do go in hoop houses, and then my hoop houses are like 6x6, and yes, I do have a heater out there because I usually get them out by the 1st of May. And, you baby the heck out of them until you take the hoop houses off of them.
And as we mentioned before, it doesn't always work. I was just talking again. George is a perfect example, George Janowick, because he said this year he didn't even enter because he had nothing worked for him this year.
You have them years. I've had them years where it's, you know, everything you grow either splits on you, or you just can't get nothing to pollinate.
Uh-huh.
Because we do hand pollinate to make your crosses that you want. So we're actually trying to advance the, you know, the weight category by cross. I think this cross here goes with this pumpkin here, and, you know, like I said, heavy. I crossed a heavy pumpkin with another heavy pumpkin this year, and it turned out to be my biggest one. And we'll see what next year, if that, what genetics follow through.
So have you had the giant pumpkin guys already descending on you and saying, "Hey, can I get some of that seed?"
Oh yeah, I mean, there's been, yeah, I've had requests, but you know, I hope to have a whole bunch of seeds. Sometimes you don't have a bunch of seeds. Sometimes you have lots of seeds, and whatever I can hand out and give out, it was, you know, it's kind of fun to see if somebody else can, what they can do with your seed.
Uh-huh. Now, what's interesting is that there is a pumpkin contest in Illinois, but you didn't enter that one. You entered in Wisconsin. Why was that?
See, I work shift work. I'm a factory worker, so I get one long weekend off a month, and it just, the Wisconsin way off falls on my long weekend, so I don't take vacation. It's hard sometimes to get vacation time to, you know, schedule for a way off, and so I just, whatever falls my days off. So this, I only could enter in one weekend in this year because I don't have the time off to go enter.
Wow. See, for all those folks who are listening to this and thinking, that's a glamorous world to be in, giant pumpkin grower.
Yeah.
Not so much, huh?
Well, it is if you got, you know, you have a good year and have a bunch of pumpkins, but this, I mean, I only go to one way off because that's all, the only thing that can fit in my work schedule.
Just getting them to the way off can be tricky because if it's damaged along the way, you could lose the contest that way.
Yeah. I mean, when I haul it on a trailer or in the back of my truck, wherever it fits the most, the best, I usually have it on a pallet and have like a 2-inch styrofoam underneath it. So if you do hit a bump, it don't go bouncing around and crack on you.
Yeah. So what happens to this pumpkin? Have you named the pumpkin?
The one this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of named it, but I really didn't name it.
What's the name?
I call it ACW.
And what does that stand for?
My three grandkids.
Oh, that's great. ACW. And what's going to happen to ACW now that he or she has won the contest?
It has a chance to go to the New York Botanical Gardens if it's one of the top three in the states here.
Wow. That'll take some shipping magic, won't it?
If they want the pumpkin, they're going to have to get it because that's a long way to haul a pumpkin.
Yeah, but if they take the pumpkin, how are you going to get the seeds?
Everybody's told me that they will return the seeds to me.
Yes, like, sure they
that,
will.
Yeah. No, they will. It's the Botanical Garden.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Well, Gene McMullen, congratulations on, what was it, 21:45.5 is what I'm seeing.
Yeah, that's the official weight, yeah.
Holy smoke. That's something else. That's, you could carve a jack-o'-lantern and climb inside of it with that.
Yeah, oh, it's I'm still in shock that it actually grew in my yard, yes.
And is it, do you have a farm or is it just a yard?
No, I live in town. I mean, I have a 50 by 50 area that I grow in.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's not big compared to some of the big time growers that have, you know, they plant 6 and 8 plants, where I try and start 3 plants, and what I get out of it is what I get.
Well, Gene, this is a victory for the little guy.
I think it helps prove that, you know, just because you don't have a big area to grow in, you can still grow a big pumpkin.
That's wonderful. Well, congratulations again, and we'll be looking forward to next year to see if you can do a repeat. I don't think very many people have ever done that.
I try and beat whatever I grew last year. That's my competition, is to beat my personal best.
Well, that's going to be tough.
I said that last year, but this year was way out of my league. I'll be the first to admit it, that it's got me kind of dumbfounded about it.
Well, and that's delightful. I just think this is wonderful, and it's great that the state of Illinois holds the record pumpkin that was grown right here in our state. I like that. At least for 1 year, we're going to sit back and say, yep, we got the biggest pumpkin in North America. Well, I know you got to get going. You've got things to see, and you're just like, it's a normal day for you, a normal Saturday. You got to get off and go see people. But
actually, I got to go to work today.
Yeah, that
I work the weekends.
Yeah, even worse. So how I'm going to term this, as I said before, is a victory for the common man, for the working guy who grows a pumpkin in his backyard, and suddenly it turns out to be the largest pumpkin ever grown in North America. Wow, what an accomplishment.
Yeah, it was an accident waiting for it happening, I guess, and it just happened to me.
Okay, G, I hope we get to meet sometime. And take care, have a great day, and we'll talk soon.
And thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Bye. Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakening Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com or call us today at 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, and looky here who's sitting next to me, but an old friend of the show. You're not old, but you're a friend. And you've been
getting older.
That's because you're working with Master Gardeners. And it's Sarah Batka, who is the Chicago Master Gardener Coordinator, who has been known to sit in on this program. And it's so good to see you. Hi.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, my pleasure. We're here in the South Side. For those south side of Chicago, for those listening someplace else, yes. And it only takes a million years to get from the north side to the south side of Chicago, especially the southwest side of Chicago. And the reason I'm here, and I'm at St. Jane de Chantal's Parish Hall on South McVicar. Did I come close to pronouncing it right?
That sounded absolutely perfect.
Okay, great. Is because a person named the Reverend Linda Weigant recently won an award, and I'm going to talk more about the organization that gave her the award after this segment. She runs something called Grace Seeds Ministry, and a project called Share the Harvest. And you, Sarah Batka, nominated her to the International Network for Urban Agriculture, also sometimes known as INUAG.
Right.
Why?
Why did I nominate Linda? Because I met Linda through the Master Gardener program, and I see all the good work that she's doing, providing access to food for underserved communities. And Linda has told me some of the struggles that she's had with frozen kale. And
now, wait a second. I just froze my kale, all right? Harvested it.
On purpose.
On purpose. Oh, yeah, on purpose. There's a difference, huh?
Yeah, so this was it. So we identified a need within her service for safe food handling and for storage to reduce food waste. And so this opportunity came up, and I thought, Linda, I was like, what are you doing on Tuesday? Can you please come to the office? And we worked together to write a nomination for Grace Seeds Ministry Share the Harvest program.
Well, there has to be a reason behind that. I mean, obviously there's some kind of good work being done here. Do you want to explain, Reverend Weigant, about Grace Seeds Ministry and Share the Harvest?
Sure. Well, first, a huge thank you to University of Illinois Extension, and in particular to Sarah for reaching out and letting us know about the prize, and then also working collaboratively with us, but also really educating me about how to even move forward with applying for grants and prizes. We're a small nonprofit, growing but still small. We have 32 growing partners, started with faith communities but have expanded to include anybody who is interested in addressing hunger and poverty.
Can I stop you right there?
Sure.
How do you amass 32 partners? How long has that taken?
You know, our first three partners joined us in 2006, and so it's been a steady growth since then. We take relationships seriously, so when we engage with a new partner, it means sitting down and hearing their story and learning about their context, learning about their vision, seeing what gifts and skills we might bring and engage in partnership with what they bring.
And did that start with you growing stuff and mixing and matching and meeting people who also grew stuff?
No, you know what? It really started with wanting to create a hands-on experience that people could, through which people could engage their faith and their practice in the world to address such a common, basic, terrible need that continues to exist in our communities, which is hunger, right, and poverty.
Right.
But there's a real desire people have to engage that in a hands-on way that makes a significant difference in their communities immediately.
But it wasn't about growing immediately.
That was my initial sense of ministry, that it would be that.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But so I also knew that I was a plant killer, and
I
found that God was just, you know, had this amazing sense of humor that would be my sense of call. And so I thought, where can I get some training and get some support to just check this out, so that when I go and talk to a potential partner, they won't say, they'll say, what are your credentials? I mean, you know, really, what are your credentials? And so I saw a flyer for the Master Gardener program back in 2006. And I just called up and I said, you know, I have this, you know, passion and sense of, you know, wanting to do this, but I kill plants. And so they were so welcoming, and I said yes, signed up, they said yes, and that was the beginning of a partnership that really has made this possible. Because without that education, without the ongoing education, without the network of support that Master Gardeners provide to our different partners in a variety of places, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. So,
and let's talk about what you are doing. It's growing food, but more important, because a lot of people grow food and then can't figure out how to get it distributed and get it to the people who actually need it. How do you accomplish that?
Right. So our process has been to develop regionally. And by region, I mean we would not connect with a food pantry unless we have two or three growing partners in that area. We found out that between, you know, three and actually four is better. Four different growing partners can provide a very nice gift once a week to a food pantry in their area. So the idea has been to grow locally and give locally, you know, where you are. We have some of our partners have grown, you know, one of our partners here today has grown something like 3,000 pounds already this summer. And so with all the other partners in that one region, we have been able to expand beyond that initial, you know, pantry partner relationship. So now that was in Oak Lawn. So now we have shared that in Morgan Park, and now that's going over to West Pullman. And so, you know, we're sort of expanding as our growers expand.
You mentioned a certain number of pounds that a group produced for you. Do you have a sense of how much food you produce each year with all your partners?
That's a great question. And so when Sarah was helping us, you know, try to quantify some of that for the nomination, we've estimated that it's about 8,000 pounds a year. And I think it's really great to have those numbers, and it's important. But also, there's just the reality that, you know, when you give herbs, it weighs a lot less than the cucumbers, and, you know, the squash weighs a lot more than, you know, the kale. And so,
is that the tyranny of the squash?
I know. Is that just that zucchini?
Really? Yeah, but it's great because it just keeps producing.
It does, and they make amazing baseball bats. Yeah. But yeah, so while the quantity, it's important to quantify, the thing I never want to lose is that qualitative experience of people engaging in growing. So one of my favorite stories is that, you know, a little boy came up to me. I had preached one Sunday, and he brought me 2 cherry tomatoes, you know, and he brought me half of his harvest off of his tomato plant. You know what? That's not going to come out to be some giant statistic that anybody may pay attention to, but it meant everything to me and everything to him. And those 2 tomatoes, those 2 cherry tomatoes, meant everything to the family that received them that week. So while I think numbers are critical, you know, to think about how one expands, you know, your program's food access, which is what this, you know, amazing prize was about, we also don't want to lose that sense of the quantity isn't the only thing we're trying to grow.
And all of this is grown in an urban situation or near suburban situation, right?
Yes, that's true. That is true. All yes, and mostly sort of how's the outer second ring, first ring out suburbs. You know, there's the inner city core, and then sort of the first ring suburbs out. Where Tinley Park maybe is our furthest south partner. That may be one more ring out, but all the others are, yeah.
And as I heard you mention earlier, you've reached out even further, and who knows where this can go eventually.
I know. Isn't that just wonderful? That's the best thing about it.
I'm thinking Iowa, you know, Nebraska.
I love Iowa.
So Sarah Batka, you saw all this good work, and you said these people deserve a prize, and you knew about INUAG. Mm-hmm. How are you connected with INUAG, or are you at all?
So I don't work with them closely, but I learned of the nominations through Advocates for Urban Agriculture. So we certainly need to share that with your listeners, the Advocates for Urban Agriculture.
You know, I will absolutely have that link because it is a great organization, and I'll have the link on MikeNovak.net.
So I had learned about it through that, and I think it's my job to put the pieces together, make the connections, very similar to what Linda does, you know, building relationships and making connections. And I was like, this is an opportunity that we should explore, and I think it's a good fit for her.
And what is the prize, and how will it change your organization?
Yeah, so it's this wonderful, amazing gift of $1,250.
Which doesn't seem like a lot to a lot of people.
Well, yes, in fact,
it does? Okay, I'm wrong here, okay.
One of the, and I don't know the name of the person at INUAG said, you know, I know it's not a huge amount of money. And I said, yes, it is, because it's going to transform our ability to, you know, hold and then transport, you know, these greens that we keep encouraging people to grow. These tender vegetables, they're just so tender. And they are in such demand. And we want to get them out to, you know, new pantry partners. But we had hit our maximum growth potential, you know, the most we could grow and give away, say, in a 24-hour period. I had filled up our home refrigerator. I had filled up another refrigerator. And one of the real challenges around food access, I think when we were talking earlier about churches engaging in this kind of work, is having a safe, reliable storage spot. And a lot of churches have refrigerators that are used by 10 groups, and they have all different kinds of things in those refrigerators. And it's just not a good source, you know, for refrigeration in lots of cases. So to have this cooler, to have a designated space that will be available for lots more greens to grow and then to share.
How big is the cooler? What kind of cooler is this you're getting?
We're looking at a 23 cubic foot cooler. We may be able to leverage this prize into another one, because, you know, it helps to have been awarded this gift. And I'm hoping that we may get another, thanks to the work that that Sarah helped us do, to be able to use some other, you know, money for to expand that yet again. The question is really how to replicate the model, the regional sort of model, in a way that we really could exponentially, you know, grow. And this cooler will let us sort of play with that model a little bit, and at the same time feed lots more, you know, people in the coming season with these tender vegetables.
So this is almost a recruiting tool for you to have this award.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're a little group. You know, we are a small nonprofit, and I think one of the things that I so appreciate about Sarah's, again, that ability that she has to listen and connect master gardeners and others to resources is that, you know, as I'm functioning basically as an executive director, but I'm not a grant writer, right? I don't have time to do the 15 things right on my plate now. So when you say to me, oh, you know, it would be great if, you know, we could do this grant for this, and I say, that would be fabulous, but when am I going to cut out time in the day to work on that? And then Sarah calls and says, you know, I will, you know, let's get together and talk, and, you know, here are some ways I can help you think about not only this grant, but grant writing in general. That is invaluable. And then, you know, the one you get this grant, and then you have some credibility.
So folks may want to know how to contact you, even folks not in Chicago, out in other areas, to learn about your model. How do they do that?
Well, I'm happy to share our email address. It's graceseedsministry@gmail.com, and happy to give our phone number, 773-495-7865, and delighted to talk with anybody who's interested in, you know, addressing hunger and poverty. And the other piece of that, I really want to say, it's also doing creation care. So those go hand in hand for us, and, you know, looking at issues like climate change and all of those pieces are actually critical, you know, to growing and living a healthy, sustainable lifestyle down the road.
So. All the stuff that's dear to my heart, and if we got started on that, we would go for another 3 or 4 hours here. So,
but it's all connected. So
it is. It is all connected. Sarah Batka, thank you so much.
Oh, great thank you, Mike.
And Reverend Wygant, congratulations on your award.
Oh, and thank you for this opportunity to talk. I've been a fan, so thank you very much.
Why do you think I came out? All right. No, thank you so much. When we come back, we'll find out what the International Network for Urban Agriculture, or INUAG, is all about. All that is next on The Mike Novak Show.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakening Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com or call us today at 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. If you heard the previous segment, you realize I was on the southwest side of Chicago visiting Grace Seeds Ministry and talking to the Reverend Linda Wygant about her Share the Harvest program and Grace Seeds Ministry's Share the Harvest program. One of the winners of a number of awards that were presented by the International Network for Urban Agriculture. As I also mentioned before, you might call it INUAG. As a matter of fact, that is the website. If you want to go there and find out more about it, it's www.inuag.org. And at this point, I want to bring in one of the co-founders and vice president of INUAG, and that's Marina Post. Marina, how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for talking to me about this. I love it when we have institutions that start in this great city of Chicago, but that benefit people all over the world, and that's why I want to talk to you. Of course, now, I found out about INUAG last year because Christy Weber, who has an outfit called Christy Weber Landscapes. She also has Christy Weber Farm and Garden in the city of Chicago. And if you want to get to either of those, Christy Weber's at christyweber.com, christyweber.com. For the Farm and Garden Center, you can go to cwfng.com and you'll get there. And of course, if you live in Chicago, you should stop by because Marina is the co-manager of the Farm and Garden Center, and that's where you and I have met before. But INUAG is a whole new deal. How did this happen?
A small group of us actually several years ago thought it would be a really cool idea to start an urban farm in the old post office building. And actually, Chrissy was one of those people. We're all friends, and we just met in our living room talking about ideas of urban farming and vertical agriculture, and even went so far as to draw up some architectural plans for an aquaponics, mushroom-growing, you know, vegetable-growing facility. And
in the old post office?
In the old post office, which is, it would actually be a 60-acre urban farm.
That's amazing. And for folks who don't live in Chicago, the old post office is this monstrous building that is still standing there. And I have had, that's funny you should mention it. I know Christy talked to me about this a couple of years ago. She said, yeah, we'd really like to do this. And you know how Christy is. She's got these ideas, and let's do it right now. Mm-hmm. But I've had people write to me and say, you know, we ought to take the old post office and do something with it, and we ought to grow food in it. And so there are other people thinking along the same lines.
Yeah, except a crazy Brit bought it and was planning on creating something like the Mall of America in it, I think. I'm not really sure what those were, but I know that the building was sold, and at the time when we were having all these ideas, it became clear that this was not going to happen. So we thought, well, what if we started an organization to network urban ag, you know, urban farmers, and then we eventually could present ourselves as this viable organization that really could benefit from using this space, which was still vacant. So that was the beginning of InuAg, and a small group of us, there were six of us who would meet in our living room every other week and just brainstorm. And one of the things we thought about was there were so many community gardens, community farms, urban ag organizations, which essentially were always reinventing the wheel, feeling very disconnected from each other. And people who, for example, wanted to have chickens but didn't know that they could, or in their community it wasn't allowed and they didn't know how to advocate for it.
You know, I have to stop you there because I have had that issue come up with me. For one thing, a friend of mine who lives out in the burbs, I believe Libertyville, and it's a suburb of Chicago, and was talking to me about it. And he says, we need to have chickens here in Libertyville, but he's running into all kinds of barriers against it. Now, in Chicago, it's actually a little easier to do.
Yeah, you can have as many chickens as you want in the city of Chicago so long as you don't slaughter them for meat.
So you had these folks, and they were trying to come together. You're trying to find a way to connect various community gardens in what they do.
Yeah, and really trying to connect. Our vision was really that communities worldwide are reconnected to the production of their food. It started out on a local basis, but then the more we thought about it, we thought, well, what if there's a farmer in India, in New Delhi, that's growing on his rooftop, and his whatever his modality is would be applicable to an urban farm in St. Louis? Or, you know, what if there was some sustainable farming method in another part of the world, or in the U.S. that could be shared across borders? Wouldn't that be a cool thing? And so we thought about creating this network where people could share their resources, they could share educational programming, they could share advocacy issues. And so that was the birth of InuAg. And it turned out when we did a retreat to brainstorm the vision and the mission and the name, and when we came up with, we were thinking about network, urban agriculture, and Inua, it turns out, is the Inuit word to mean, I think, the spirit in everything.
Ah.
So we thought that was kind of cool. That was Inua, and it was InuAg.
Which is why in your logo, Inua is all in caps, and the G is the only lowercase.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's pretty cool. I like that. But how did you draw in people from other countries?
So we initially were just a small group of friends in Chicago, and then we hooked in a guy named Roger Cooley, who teaches at IIT and has worked with Heifer International, and he knew Erica Allen through Growing Power.
Mm-hmm.
And Erica Allen had done some networking in some countries in Africa where they had gone and done an exchange program. And so that was sort of the beginning. And in addition, one of our members, one of our founding members' wife was an artist, and she was traveling back and forth to India and started doing a different project that was involving art and food and culture. So it was sort of tying together some different things.
Mm-hmm.
So starting with Africa and India, those were our jumping off points. And
those are pretty good jumping off points, if you ask me.
They are. And there's so much happening in the world. So it took us a while to build our website, and then we had a fundraiser last year, which allowed us to continue with an executive director and continue building the website. And our goal was that this year at our fundraiser, we would actually give out prizes to innovative urban ag people across the globe.
You had that, and actually I would have been there. I had a conflict that night, but I took notice of that. And then a friend of mine, Sarah Batka from Illinois Extension, wrote in the Master Gardener newsletter that she sends out, and I am a Master Gardener, Illinois Master Gardener, about one of the awardees, who was the Reverend Linda Weigent and Grace Seeds Ministry. And I thought, well, this is my chance to pull this all together.
Right.
So obviously she won an award, and she was very sweet about it. When I talked to her, she said that one of your people said, well, we can't give you a lot of money. It's $1,200 or something, $1,250, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, are you kidding me? This is going to change our lives.
Right.
And so even small amounts really do good, don't they?
They do. And one of the things that you realize when you are working on an international level is also how far the dollar goes. We only had a limited amount of money that we had to divvy up between all of our winners, and we thought, $1,250 in the States, well, I'm grateful that she's happy that it will do a lot for her organization, but imagine if you were in Bolivia, for example, or Haiti, how much farther those dollars will go and what an impact they can make.
Right. And that's something I was thinking, too, is that, yeah, in other countries, it does a huge amount of good. And the categories you were using were educating producers,
mm-hmm.
Focusing on educating community members to grow sustainable food, food access, which is where the Grace Seeds Ministry came in. They won in food access. And it's obviously distributing that food, and then teaching youth. And I see that you actually have a winner from Bolivia. And what were some of the other places that won?
We had an organization in Haiti that won. It was very exciting. We actually had another winner in Chicago, the Garfield Park Community Council.
Under what category?
They were in the youth. Food access also. They won third prize in our food access.
Okay.
But the training youth program we have in the Jaden Top Top at Sakala was in Port-au-Prince, and it's a really amazing organization in Haiti, which is serving an estimated 300,000 residents at this point.
Hokey smokes.
So it's a pretty amazing community, and they have just over 2 acres of growing space, and they are in an area that's plagued with violence, and they're essentially helping teens to engage in productive activities with farming and hoping to mitigate the need to join local gangs and provide food security for them, clean water, and all the children at the farm are fed daily from the nutritional crops that are grown there.
And I see you had a group from Kenya and one from Nashville, Tennessee.
Yep.
And it's kind of interesting to have, that you're looking out for groups in North America, but having that world vision, mm-hmm. is so important too, because unfortunately here in the United States, we lose sight of the rest of the world far too often. We just don't seem to have a clue as to what dire situation these people are in. And as you said, $1,200 in some other countries is an amazing amount of money.
Yeah, and also having that award, we think of ourselves as a relatively new and unknown organization, but many of our nominees said that if they were to win this prize, just having the stamp of approval from INUAG would allow them to go back for extended funding in their own country or in their own organization because they had increased credibility.
You know, that's funny. That's what the Reverend Weigand said, too. Mm-hmm. It's going to help her right here in Chicago. Well, congratulations on doing this. So what are the next steps for INUAG?
So this year we put out our prize request only with about only a month's lead time, just because that's what the way it worked. And we had 52 nominated projects. That was really exciting from all over the world. And so the goal is next year to increase that number, to increase the amount of outreach so that we get even more people involved, spread the word, and, you know, maybe if we can, we did a fundraiser, and if we can continue to raise more money, then we can continue to give away more money. So that's the goal.
Well, congratulations, Marina Post, co-founder and vice president of INUAG, and I hope folks will go to that website, inuag.org, and of course, that is short for International Network for Urban Agriculture. I look forward to hearing more from you and about the good work you're doing, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you so much, and just so your members know, you can join for and support us for as little as a dollar.
Oh, okay. And how to
welcome any amount.
And so they just go to the website and they can contribute.
Yep, they can contribute. They can register for free, and they can contribute as little as a dollar and become a sponsor.
And I hope folks will do that. All right, I'll talk to you soon, Marina.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Just one more thing. Go green or go home.
You can find more information about the Mike Novak Show at mikenovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net for links, photos, and commentary.